5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Marketing Sherpa Podcast. We're going to have an in-depth marketing discussion about a crucial topic starting now. We are being controlled, fellow marketers. We are being controlled by these little, tiny, insidious plastic and metal and glass devices. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Mobile marketing, the topic of episode number 2 of the Marketing Sherpa Podcast. These smartphones, these cell phones are changing the world. They're changing marketing. Let's talk about how you can keep up, how you can excel. Joining me today, I've got Rebecca Strally. She's going to talk about a lot of the experiments we run here at MechLabs Institute, the parent research institute of Marketing Sherpa. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca.
Yeah, thanks for having me, I guess.
She's going to be thankful she's here. And also Matt Klein. Matt works with a lot of the research partners of MechLabs Institute directly. He's a research partnership director. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you, Dan. I am a podcast noob, so take it easy on me.
Podcast new. Well, you got some good things you're going to bring us. So the funny thing about mobile marketing is, you know, in an era where all this technology is evolving and we're using it every day, there are still people who knit like Rebecca. I don't understand that. We're going to talk about the most breaking technology. We're going to talk about phones that at the speed of light, you can talk to someone on the other side of the world through satellites. And Rebecca, why are you knitting?
Keeps my hands busy.
Which is the exact reason people use smartphones.
So. I mean, but you can't. So I would say the difference is, like, I can't play, like, Bejeweled Blitz or Candy Crush and still, like, retain the information happening in a conversation. But I don't know why. I think because I've been doing it since I was 10, I can knit and be completely engaged in what's going on around me. In fact, if I'm not doing something complicated, I don't even have to look down at my hands. I can do it without looking.
So I think you just kind of inadvertently set up perfectly the topic of today's podcast, which is mobile device or segment, which you're kind of saying that you are a different person when you are on a mobile device than when you are not on a mobile device. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And that's what we have to understand about our customers. Those are some of the experiments we're going to talk about today. So Rebecca, since this was your idea, why don't you set up the mobile? Is it a device or is it a segment?
Yeah. So this was a question that got posed during a brainstorm we were having on mobile content for the month, because we're doing a focus this month, right, Dan? Or this quarter, technically, on the mobile device on all of our content sites.
We've got a new mobile micro course to help marketers of the world improve conversion on their mobile messaging, but go on.
Yep. So lots of cool stuff coming out. And one of the big questions that came up in our brainstorm was this idea of mobile, and is it a device or is it a segment? And the thought there was, do we as marketers and do developers and designers and website builders and digital people, everybody who's responsible for the way the internet looks and functions and operates and what it says today, should we be treating the mobile phone like it's just a smaller version of a desktop computer? Or should we be treating the mobile phone like it's a gateway to a completely different audience than the one we have on desktop? And I don't mean that to mean that, like, literally the person who accesses my website may be different on desktop versus mobile, like a different human. But I mean that their motivations may be very different, what they're interested in, what they're trying to accomplish, and the way they're interested in going about doing all those things may be different on desktop versus mobile, which would make them a segment more so than the exact same kind of target, just using my content or my website or buying my product on a smaller device. And so we kind of posed that question, and then we roped Matt into helping us answer it, or at least talking about it for the next however long it takes.
The importance there, if I'm getting it, is because if they're a device, if they're a segment, the difference there, that'll change how you message to them, and that'll change possibly how likely they are to convert.
Yeah, I think it would have a lot to do with messaging, right? So when we talk about messaging, and even some like functionality and availability of certain functions on the device, I think, it was why we want to know if they're a segment or a device. Because if it's just a device, then all we have to worry about is making the UX fit a smaller screen, you know?
Yeah, so I think one of the core things we're really talking about here, if we boil it down and we actually, you know, we can use our own method when we talk about this, is motivation, right? Does a mobile user fundamentally have a different motivation than a desktop user?
Speaking of motivations, Matt, so you recently conducted a science experiment about smartphones and their effects on our lives, I understand. Can you tell us about your science experiment?
Very inadvertently conducted one, and I actually have my smartphone to thank for it. This was just last week. I had my smartphone screen just decided to cut off, and it went completely blank. I didn't know what to do. And so for about 48 hours, I was completely without my mobile device. And while I will tell you, I came to two realizations in the 48 hours I was without my cell phone. Realization number one is I did not realize how much I rely on it for absolutely everything, from a calculator to my daily weather planning to when I get dressed in the morning to even just, you know, obviously wasting time. You can find just about anything on a smartphone to waste time with. But the other thing is that I also discovered and realized how liberating it was not to have a smartphone for a short period of time. Now, ultimately, when I got my phone back and it was fixed, I was glad I had it back, and I was glad that I was able to get to the information and do the things that I've kind of built into my everyday life. But it was really kind of nice to be able to disconnect and actually pay attention when my wife tells me something. So
when you told me this story, it just got me thinking about how we've almost become cyborgs and smartphones have become part of our brains. So I was thinking of, there was this famous TED Talk about 10 years ago. I think it was really what started TED Talks. It was a neurologist by the name of Jill Bolt Taylor. And she had a stroke and it changed her brain. It was very interesting. As a neurologist, she would talk about how she felt differently. And I heard an interview with her and she said her internal monologue just turned off. So instead of waking up and thinking, that's a nice sunset, she would just experience it and know it's a nice sunset. And so she said, one, it was very freeing and liberating, like you talked about, Matt, because she just walked through and experienced life and didn't have this internal monologue, which I know plagues me. But on the flip side, she couldn't answer simple questions like, who is the president of the United States? Like, she'd have to, like, her brain would have to work, like, wait a minute, what's the president and what's the United States and who are these people and stuff? Which is also kind of like the smartphone. We can't answer, like, who was the, you know, 12th president or whatever, because we can't pull it up on Google. So think about that as we're talking about, okay, how this device affects our customers. So a little bit of empathy there. We know how it affects ourselves. So let's start. Let's dive in. Let's start with an experiment, Rebecca. What's an example of an experiment where, you know, I know you said a lot of them, you know, desktop and mobile perform similarly. Let's start with ones where they perform differently, where we'd say, hey, it's more segmenty, segmentorio, segmentipio.
Yeah. So there's quite a few examples where mobile and desktop, where one is where we think mobile is more of a segment than a device. But I think I would start by saying, just as a rule, the majority of the time we run our experience in aggregate across both platforms. And so our opportunity to test on them individually isn't always as available as we want it to be. But we've had a couple partners, and I think we're going to talk about a number of them today, where that opportunity has been available. And we've seen some really, really cool stuff. And we've gotten some great insights for this conversation.
I think that's an important thing, too, when we talk about segment versus device. That's a lot of things that marketers have to consider. Segmentation is very popular because it works very well. Personalization, segmentation. But everything costs more resources.
Yeah.
And marketers always have to decide, like, okay, where is the point of diminishing returns? What can I bite off today? Where am I going to invest? Is it worth looking at these different types of segments? Because mobile device is only one type. There's also, you know, gender, age, or where traffic's coming from, or geo, or a million other things. And so, you know, that's something to consider when testing. Hey, am I going to separate these or not?
Yep. And so I think what did we call them? A healthcare provider? We had one healthcare provider as a partner. All of our secret code words. You know, maybe we should just say the names and we can have Cliff bleep them out in post.
Let's give Cliff more work.
I think we should create as much work as possible. So we had this healthcare provider come in, and they actually had an M.dot site. So they did have a separate mobile site. It was separate from their desktop. It wasn't what we would consider a traditional responsive site where it's the exact same domain and code and everything. But over time, they had made it so that both their mobile and desktop experiences were exactly the same, despite the fact that they were on essentially different code bases and sites. So we ran a bunch of tests for them. And it took us about 3 to get our first big lift. And we ran a mobile one, we ran a desktop one, and our first big lift came on desktop. What we did was we took what had previously been a 5-step process and we cut it down to 1 page. So it had been 5 separate pages. We cut it down to 1 page and we did a very traditional massive set of primary and process level value prop on the left, form five-question form that had previously been five steps, now was one step, one form on the right. Huge win. And Matt, you were on this partner with me, so we worked on this one together.
That's right.
So we got this win, and we were very excited, and the partner was really excited, and they were like, okay, great, now let's do it on mobile. And so Matt and I were like, yeah, we'll do it on mobile.
It's the logical next step, right?
So we used every trick in the book to translate this like desktop win to mobile, and then it just lost. And it lost really bad, if I remember correctly. It was...
not a pretty test.
No, it was like a really, it was a very difficult conversation because it, I mean, it really like, it failed hard. It crashed and burned. And the partner and us, we were sitting there going, well, why? Because the value, all the value was the same. All the copy was the same. The order of the fields, like everything was the same, except it was on this mobile device. And so of course it wasn't left side, right side. It was, you know, we stacked the value on top of the form and we did, you know, everything you were supposed to do. And so we're torn. We don't know what to do about it. We still haven't gotten a win on mobile. And so Matt and I go out to the West Coast where this partner was to visit them. And so he and I are on this business trip. And we're out there hanging out with them, getting to know them, learning more about their customer. And I think you were hanging out with the CEO and doing fancy CEO stuff. And you guys like dropped me off in the call center. And they were like, hey, Rebecca, we're gonna go do fancy CEO things here on the West Coast. You listen to calls.
You say it so negatively. That's where the action is.
It was where the action was.
It's in the call center. Yeah, that's where probably the direct customer interaction.
And maybe I had more fun than
steakhouse.
Whether intentionally or inadvertently, probably the best thing we ever did.
Maybe I had more fun than Matt. I don't know. But so I got my headset and I listened to these calls and it was really, really interesting. And I got to interview a bunch of the people who worked in the call center, which was also really, really interesting. I really got to connect with the customer. And I came back with like a guess that the mobile customer was different than the desktop customer. In I think what they were looking for was different.
I believe it's called a hypothesis.
Yes. It wasn't like a real hypothesis though yet. It was because it wasn't educated, right? This was just like, it wasn't truly, it was like a gut. Like I had this feeling after talking to all the call center workers, and they were really bright. Like they would tell me what was up. So we got back and we had our data team. One of the questions in the form was why were you filling out the form today? Why was the customer filling out the form? And we had never previously, because it required a very complicated back-end data pull to get the answers, we had never previously pulled that because we were only about 3.5 months in to year-long partnership at this point. So we finally pulled it. We put the time and effort into pulling the data. We got it back. And it turns out that when you look at it broken down by device, the mobile customer was filling out the form for emergency issues. Like they were in crisis. And the desktop customer wasn't. Like the desktop customer was just like, I'm looking for like a new GP, whatever, when you got a minute. And the mobile customer is like, I am in 10 out of 10 pain. Help me now. And it really said something, I think, to us about how different those audiences were and why people were using their mobile device instead of their desktop computer to fill out this form. And as soon as we started looking at them through that lens and we removed kind of like all that value, they didn't want any of that value. We like really dropped everything from the mobile thing. And we just, it was like the cleanest, quickest, almost like dirtiest funnel because there was none of that like value copy, none of that. But that's not what they wanted. All of a sudden we started seeing better results. But I didn't run that part, that partner hung around. They were with us for quite a while and I didn't finish them out. But Matt, if I remember correctly, we never got mobile and desktop for that partner back to being the same funnel. They were different from that point forward, weren't they?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we basically learned how different the motivations were between those two audiences. And it was actually, you know, despite some of the, you know, the resources required to maintain it and all of the effort to essentially create two different experiences, one for desktop, one for mobile, it was much more beneficial to the business to do so. So we treated them like a segment and it produced better. And it required a little bit more resources to maintain, but it was worth it.
Well, two things I hear there. I mean, one, great point. So we look at data, we look at test results all the times, but sometimes they're confusing. How do we make meaning of them? So take someone like Rebecca, just drop her in the call center, leave her there, go out for a steak with the CEO, and you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
But seriously, you got to find ways, qualitative ways, because, you know, if you get involved in A/B testing, sometimes it's just data, 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 and that's going to decide everything. But the data doesn't always tell you the why, right? Yeah. That introspective reason of the why. And so how can you get with the customer? How can you get closer to them? Call center is a great way, but even interviewing customers, interviewing sales folks, customer service reps to try to figure out and make meaning of the data.
That qualitative data really can change things sometimes. It's not the first partner we've had that happen on.
Yeah. Yeah, oftentimes your call center reps, your salespeople, even your customer service reps, so the people that are servicing your customers after you've converted them, can be your most valuable source of insights to make meaning of the why behind the what.
The why behind the what.
Coin it.
All right, so that's a great example where it's a segment. I mean, the company had the resources to make it a segment to really keep those two funnels separate and serve the segments, you know, best. So, but Matt, you've also got an example in the healthcare sector where the segments were also very different, but they still used one landing page and found success. How'd that happen?
Yeah, this was similar industry, but a certainly a very different service. And what we found is that this group was more of in the mental health side of things. And when we were testing short form versus long form. So how much information did these customers need to actually be able to convert? And what we found is that when we went into, they were going from a short form, we were hypothesizing that a long form would actually work. And when we went into the data to look at it, we looked at mobile data, and it was actually, of all things, it was the timestamp that gave us the most interesting user data about their mobile device or their mobile behavior. And it had to do with when they were... when they were browsing, and it was really late at night or very early in the morning. It was the 3 a.m. people that were on mobile that were actually the most likely to convert. And these were people that, like I said, this was a mental health service provider. You know, these people were in crisis mode as well. But the thing is it's such a high anxiety decision that they need a lot of information. So when we tested short form versus long form, we found that long form worked. Now, flashback to what we were talking about, difference in motivation between desktop and mobile. Desktop people that were browsing much more regular hours, but it was generally more preventative. It might have been a loved one, or it might have even been the patient themselves or the prospective patient themselves, but they were more in preventative mode. Maybe a crisis hadn't necessarily happened, but they were still, it was still a high anxiety decision. And so what we found is that the motivations were oftentimes different, crisis mode versus non-crisis, but the solution, which was long form, high anxiety relief, more information to help them make sure they're making the right decision, was still the right solution. And ultimately what we were able to do is to deliver a single experience across both desktop and mobile.
Yeah. So that kind of location device, being on the mobile or desktop, is the context sometimes. But just because your context changes doesn't mean what you need changes, right? At the end of the day, they just need an anxiety reduction, right?
Right, right. No, exactly. And I think we see that probably more often than not related to this. And a lot of times it actually has to do with, as a marketer, you're sometimes faced with hard decisions. Do I want to optimize to maximize matching of motivation? Or am I going to ultimately, in doing that, hit constraints related to resources or budget or any of the number of other challenges that we have when we're trying to, create our optimal sort of marketing campaign. So I think that's a big challenge. Is oftentimes, being able to at least identify those different motivations can be helpful in creating a single solution that works across both desktop and mobile.
Yeah, you need to at least understand them to make that happen though, right?
Right.
All right, so let's take the flip side of what you just said about reducing anxiety. So it sounds like, okay, long form works because you need to reduce anxiety for people. But you had a great example in the travel industry where we had to do the exact opposite. We just had to strip it down and get right to it.
Yeah, so this was basically a travel provider.
Aggregator.
Travel aggregator, that's a good one. And what they were doing on mobile is actually anytime you would browse in organically, you would be hit with a mobile interrupt for their app. Now, an app customer is fundamentally substantially more valuable to them than just a single conversion customer, but we don't want to try to promote the app at the expense of a conversion on mobile. So what they were originally doing is the mobile interrupt was just a picture of the app and then two links to either download the app or no thanks, just browse on the mobile site. And we thought, okay, you know, logic would tell us we need to ramp up the perceived value of the app. And in doing so, we created, you know, a really value-centric mobile interrupt, hitting all of the key points of the value of the app. And we tried probably three tests in a row doing similarly, highlighting different points, even incentivizing the app download, and all of them absolutely tanked. Just completely tanked against a really simple layout of just an image of the app and two CTAs in not only app downloads, but also in conversions, because we were getting in their way. We were giving them something that was fun, that was, you know, essentially different from what they were looking for. They were looking to complete a purchase or at least to browse travel options, and we were just getting in their way. And so the most simple way that we could provide that just let them make a decision quickly and move on was the most effective way. And then ultimately, when we took that mobile interrupt out, we saw the highest conversion of any of it, and we didn't really negatively impact app downloads because it still populated the feature where it allows you to download the app through the browser.
The thing at the top?
Yeah, the interrupt at the top. And I know Rebecca's a big fan of app interrupts, so this was not her favorite test.
I am anti-app pushing.
Well, I think one thing it shows is like how strong friction is in mobile, even more so than desktop. So I read this great quote the other day in this article in New Yorker, oddly enough, about podcasts. And they said, they were talking about in their early days of podcasts like 10 years ago. I mean, that's not that long ago, right? It said, podcasts had to be laboriously transferred from a computer to an MP3 player or an iPod. It's like, kids, you'll never know how hard we had it. You know what I mean? Like, I remember that. It really was not that hard. It was a technological marvel. You could download all these free podcasts, just plug in your iPod and then listen to them. But it's funny, just that little bit of friction, removing that little bit of friction, according to the article, is one thing that really helped iPods take off, because now obviously you can just download it on your device. So
I believe that.
Quick interruption. We call it an audio modal to give you something of value about mobile marketing. Just to remind you, the Marketing Sherpa podcast is brought to you by MechLabs Institute, and MechLabs has just launched a mobile micro course, because it's a micro course that can help you increase mobile conversion rates. Just 4 short classes, each under 12 minutes, that apply 25 years of research to help you maximize the impact of your messages in a mobile environment and give you a new way to think about conversion, a new way to think about the person, the people, the customers that are looking at their mobile devices and how you can give them something of value to improve your own results. Just go to mechlabs.com/mobile course. That's mechlabs.com/mobile course. Sign up for free. Okay, let's close this audio modal, get back into the podcast, because I'm probably about to say something pretty brilliant in just a few minutes. What's one piece of friction that drives you crazy on mobile devices, Rebecca?
On mobile devices, a piece of friction that drives me crazy? I mean, there are a lot of... it's hard to pick just one. I think when I think about mobile devices in general, the app, like trying to force me to use apps when I could just use your website, kills me. I read an article the other day where somebody, I can't remember. There was an expert who had said that the future of mobile was the mobile app instead of the web.
Oh man, Google doesn't want to hear that.
And I just feel like that's not true. At least that's not true for me. I'll be like mobile web till I die. I think the real thing for marketers, for me, it's when companies don't make it easy to pull up their coupon on my mobile device. And some of that, I will admit, has to do with cell service. In fact, as part of prep for this, Matt and I were talking this morning about one of my favorite, it's actually not one of my favorite stores, but I end up there a lot for different things, craft store. They send out a lot of emailed coupons, but I swear, every one of their stores is in an area where the signal just does not work for my phone. And I end up at the register. And like the way their process works, you click on the email coupon. It takes you to the website, but then you're not done because you have to pick one of like 15 coupons that you want to use from the list. And then you have to enter your location. It won't auto detect it. It has to identify the list of stores. You have to pick the store, and then it gives you the code that the cashier can scan. And like, I can't describe the frustration if I forget to pull it up when I'm in line or there isn't a line, and then I get to the cashier and I feel so awkward because I'm standing there and it's like a 12-minute process to get this stupid coupon up to save 45 cents and I die every time.
So that reminds me real quick of mobile bringing friction into real life. So,
yes.
So I was at Whole Foods not too long after the whole, you know, Amazon gobbled up and absorbed Whole Foods.
Yes.
Amazonverse. And, you know, in front of me was an older woman. I guess she had Amazon Prime or whatever, because now you get those discounts. And she's, you know, the cashier's trying to help her, and she's pushing, just figuring out how do you do the thing on the, you know, on the device to get the discount. But meanwhile, the freaking line is backing up, and we're like, come on, let's get going here. So it's like combining brick and mortar
and
mobile and digital is great, but it's so hard and can add friction in the real life non-mobile environment.
It's so hard to do it well. And we talked about this.
Yeah,
the one place that does it well.
Yep, Target.
They kill it. Their app kills it, I think. And the only thing that they get wrong is their inventory isn't as accurate as it could be. And so I like to shop, and I'll shop in Target. And sometimes what I'll do is if I want something and they don't have the exact one I want or the size I need on the shelf, I will actually scan it on the app and it'll say like, oh, we have your size. And I'll actually buy it through the app while I'm standing in the store for pickup, because they get it ready within an hour. So they go into the back, they get it ready, and they'll have it ready when I've bought like all my other stuff at Target. But sometimes it's lies. Like, yeah. I'll check out with everything else, and instead of having an email that's like, your pickup order is ready, I'll have an email that's like, your order was canceled. Or, and this drives me nuts, they will auto change it because they have my address on file. They will change it to a shipping order. And they'll say, you can't pick this up, but we're gonna send it to your house in 2 days. And I'm just like, no, Target. I'd rather drive 30 minutes to the next closest Target that has it than wait 2 days. I wish they'd let you pick.
Yeah.
But their whole integration just is amazing.
And they've been, I mean, you know, they've kind of been pioneers for a lot of the omni-channel experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
they've done a good job.
Even the earliest forms of segmentation and personalization as well, but I think that example really speaks to why even as getting a real customer experience right is not just a marketer's or a salesperson's job. It is the job of the entire business. Because when you bring in, say, inventory management into that, it has to integrate seamlessly into what you're doing in your own app with your marketing, et cetera. Especially for, you know, these companies, you know, big box retailers that retail, you know, return purchases and a much more condensed life cycle it's really important to be able to tie the entire business, and it takes kind of everybody being on the same page to do it.
They really are a company. They have brought together inventory management and the omni-channel thing and like in-phone scanning and geo-targeting. Like their geo-locating is exceptional. If you use their drive-up service and you let it know your location, you don't have to tell it you're on your way to the store. It knows that you've pulled into the parking lot. So by the time you get to the parking spot, like half the time, the target, like the person, the person who's bringing you the thing is already there.
I swear the middle of the Target bullseye is just a giant eye that scans the parking lot.
It's
Sauron.
We're gonna talk about another brick and mortar experiment in
yes.
a minute. But one thing I want to talk about apps, I want to get to real quick on apps is where you talk about, hey, the mobile web works just fine. So this is a mistake I've seen a lot of marketers make, a lot of brands make. They hear that, okay, if someone downloads an app, that's a higher customer life cycle. You know, it's a more valuable customer if they download the app, so they push all these apps that are pointless. And we did this study in Marketing Sherpa, and we asked, hey, like, you know, why do you download apps to all these consumers? And not surprisingly, it's because there's a unique value proposition to the app. So that's something for all the marketers to think about too. Even if it's free, you know, the app is a product, and is there a unique value proposition there? Is there a reason to download it, or if they download it, to keep using it? Or is it just, are you pushing it because it's not, doesn't benefit the customer? Are you pushing it because you're like, oh, higher customer value, I'm going to just push it on them and try to get them to use it?
Well, so, and I think my question is, are people in your using your app higher value because they're using your app, or are your higher value customers using your app?
That's the cart and the horse.
But so I think we struggle with that. So this, we've gone a little bit off device versus segment here, but just from a mobile app perspective, not specific to mobile apps, but another example to prove that point is we had this huge telecommunications partner once, and they, one of their marketing managers was digging around in data one day and uncovered this stat where those who watched videos on their website were like 3 times more likely to convert. And they were thrilled with this news. Like, this statistic like spread like wildfire through their marketing department and came back to us, and they were like, guys, people who watch our videos are 3 times more likely to buy our product. This is amazing. All we have to do is get everybody watch. Yes, get everybody to watch our videos. If they watch a video, they'll buy our thing. And they were so excited. And like everybody here at MechLabs, we all like got in a room and we were like, do we tell them? Like, do we explain that it's just like the more motivated customers are going to watch the videos anyway? And the answer that came back was no. We'll run some tests. And so, I mean, we kind of told them, but then we ran some tests to prove the point. We ran a lot of tests. And the more people, because we are very good at what we do, we got a lot more people to watch videos. Because, I mean, like, if you give us a goal, our team's going to go forth and like, I've never known us to not manage to accomplish what we're aiming to do. And so, you know, we went out there and I said to the testing team, I was like, we got to get more people to watch videos. I said, that's what we're doing. Video plays, that's your KPI. And we got a lot of video plays. And you know what happened? That statistics where people who watched videos are 3 times more likely to convert, it went down to 2 times more likely, then 1 time more likely. And then all of a sudden, like the more video plays we got, the by the time it reached its peak, people who watched videos were less likely to convert.
Just got more people on there.
Yeah, because we skewed the metric. We got more people to watch videos, but the people who were motivated were still watching the video and buying, but we got a bunch of people who weren't motivated to buy to watch the video, and it didn't change their desire to buy the product.
So you said we got off the device for a segment thing. I think we got a level deeper. I think we peeled the onion and got deeper because the app is the same thing.
That's exactly me. Is like,
it's not the app. Right.
I think the app.
It's the segment.
I think the app. I think that statistic about people who use the app being a higher value customer, I think your higher value customers are using your apps. And I think that's just, I use the Target app because I shop at Target on a weekly basis. If I didn't shop at Target on a weekly basis, I wouldn't use their app. I'm a high value customer.
So you're,
use the app. I'm not a high value customer because I'm using their app.
Yeah, so the app, the device isn't making you the high value customer. You're in that segment already, so you probably do everything more.
I spent way too much money.
You probably have a dog that looks like the Target dog with
a
red thing painted around it.
Right? No, but I do have a dog who has a lot of things from Target.
Well, so there you go.
You know what I mean? But no, I mean, I was a big Target shopper. I worked there. They were my first job. My first job was at Target. Nice. When I was 16.
So you never asked me my worst friction on mobile devices.
I'm so sorry, Dan.
We try to have manners here. Well, because I asked you yours, and Matt naturally said his. We try to have manners here on the podcast. So, Mon, thank you, Matt, for asking and noticing.
Wow.
Before we get into Rebecca's resume from high school, mine is load time. I think that's the worst friction of any mobile device. You know, I think you know, Matt, you talked about having to, you know, for omnichannel shopping, really get other departments involved. But even for the mobile website, making sure you're working with your IT team, making sure you have the right vendors in place so you got as quick load time as possible, because I am impatient, especially on a mobile device. Mm. I don't know about you guys.
So one thing we see all the time related to that is with the rise of responsive design, people forget to mobile optimize their imagery. And it does that. It messes up the load time. And we've had a lot of partners where we've spent a lot of time either going backwards to help them with SEO or with load time, mobile optimizing the images that come up on the mobile responded site, because they'll put in the massive desktop image. And then naturally, it will shrink down, but it's not the right one. You know, it's too heavy for the site's too big. That's a huge consideration when it comes to load time. It's become worse, I think, as responsives become more and more popular.
Let's talk about, we were talking about brick and mortar a lot, Target and some of those places. Let's talk about a brick and mortar experiment where it was like kind of like a service center, right? For cars.
Right. Yeah, actually. So I think all of this talk and all of these kind of tangents that we talked about have centered around one thing. It's the thing that we really started with at the very beginning of this, which is the idea of motivation and the idea of really, you know, they might be, mobile might be a device, might also be a segment, but it really depends based on the motivation of those people who are using their mobile devices. And I think we saw that, and Rebecca, you actually had a big role to play in sort of the hypothesizing, the brainstorming for this particular series of tests, because we were optimizing a mobile experience, really targeting for these automotive service centers, really targeting to get people to schedule appointments. But on mobile, one of the things that came out of the brainstorming was that these people may not necessarily be looking to schedule an appointment. They're just looking to get to the place. And especially these people that are coming in primarily from either referral within the site or from organic search, so local listings, things like that, they're trying to find the place and not necessarily, you know, they're well on their way to either driving there or in the process of maybe even getting their car.
In our defense, this was like, God, it would have been almost 4-5 years ago now we were running some of these.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, yeah.
Just in our defense, because when we came up with this hypothesis, it was like a big aha moment. And I feel like in today's marketing world, it's not as big of an aha moment. But I remember sitting in the room when we were talking about all of this, and that thought coming out of the room, like that idea that like the people on the mobile device are behaving differently because they might literally be on their way to the location.
Yeah.
And it was like, everybody was like, oh. Like it all makes sense now.
And yeah, and one of the challenges of that test is so our primary KPI for the test was appointment conversions.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw is that we actually got a lot of appointment starts, but very few people actually converted. Conversions across the test were flat. And it was because people were, or we I guess hypothesized that people were you know, using it for either phone number or address, and then starting the appointment process so that they could find out if they were going to be able to be helped while they were on their way to the store. You know, making sure there was a time or a wait, and so we didn't ultimately influence the primary KPI of the test, but we learned a really valuable insight about the customer and when they were using when they were engaging with the site on their mobile device. And one other interesting point about that test is, so we had a couple other sort of secondary KPIs. One was about, you know, getting tire quotes, and another was about coupon engagement. And this kind of goes back to the challenge of mobile couponing. But those were secondary KPIs, so they were a little bit below the fold, but we wanted to see which one had higher priority. And so we had a couple of different treatments, and it was coupon engagement far and away that was the higher converter when we put that closer to the top. And I think it further speaks to the fact that they were likely, you know, they might have been in the waiting area scrolling through the coupons, seeing if they could get any deals. And, it, you know, a lot of times this some, you know, coupons incentives can have a business challenge to that. But with this particular partner, they auto applied coupons and discounts when you went through the process. So it had no real negative impact to their business results. And in fact, we hypothesized it could even have a positive impact in cross sells and upsells because they were offering sort of special deals.
Well, it sounds like when we're talking about, is it a device, is it a segment, looking past aggregate results and also looking past just a primary KPI is really important to really uncover customer behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting. We can't answer that question. Is it a device? Is it a segment? Sounds like it really just matters. You have to test for your own audience. I mean, we talked about some examples where long pages work. We really want some, you know, anxiety reducers. Some examples where short pages work, where we want to get the friction out of the way because people were out with their mobile device and just wanting to get to the thing. So
yeah.
I think the end result, the end punchline, the end answer to Rebecca's gnawing question is sometimes it's a device and sometimes it's a segment. It depends on what resources you can invest, and it depends on... you know, who your individual customers and individual product and individual behaviors are. Is that fair summation there, Rebecca?
I think it's a fair summation of the conversation. I'd really be interested to see what our listeners think the answer is based on their own experience or for their own company.
Well, they can write us.
Yes. So I would challenge them to reach out because I would like to know if there's more to this story beyond the experience that we've described here today with our partners and the few case studies we've managed to share. And I think there probably is. So I'd be really interested.
And they can write us at editor@marketingsherpa.com. They can tell us about their tests and experiments, what they learned in mobile, or just what they like about this podcast. Because as we said before, it's kind of a 90-day experiment to see if podcasts are helpful for our audience or not. So tell us what you think. All right, let's leave it with on the out. One big thing to go on the out. That's my way of saying let's go on a high note. Okay, so at the end of the day, mobile marketing, what is your favorite site of all?
Ooh.
Oh, man.
Oh, why would you on the fly ask that?
Because it's like a Rorschach test. It's not something you can think deeply about. It's just,
oh, that's a tough one.
I
can answer that very easily.
Well, but see, there's like my favorite place to shop because of their product, and there's like my favorite mobile experience. And then there's my favorite mobile site I've built. Dan, this is too much. Matt, you go
Sophie's
first.
It's a Sophie's choice.
You got to pick. Go ahead.
I'll go. I'll take the easy way out. It's Google's homepage.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, come on. That's what I was going to say.
It's the simplest thing in the world.
It's always Google's. Yeah. Google's homepage. Which was made before mobile was big. They made the perfect mobile homepage, didn't they?
They did.
The search box.
There's no
white space. What do you want to find? So, yeah.
There's nothing else.
They're literally their primary value prop.
So, Matt and I agree. What do you have? Weareknitters.org or is it?
Yeah. I don't think that's a site. If that is a site, I don't know what it is. Yikes. I don't know. We talked about Target a lot. So I am feeling some Target love, but I spend a lot of time on Amazon. I spend a lot of time on Amazon.com, their mobile site, and in their app.
Why sometimes a site, sometimes the app?
And going back and forth between the two. Actually, so the site, more so if somebody sends me a link to something, or if I click on a link from like a third party, the app, I buy primarily in the app because it's got that cool little swipey purchase
one
thing.
Touch.
Yeah, with my credit card saved.
One step, yeah.
We're like, I mean, on certain product pages where like it's like, you know, $5 purchase and I do it regularly, like certain things I buy on there. I literally, if you hit buy now and you swipe that thing and then Jacksonville just got one day delivery. So sometimes it shows up the same day. It's like magic. It really, Flint talks about marketing being magic so much these days. He's been talking about like the magic of marketing and how the technology we have available to us really makes what we do feel very magical. And I would say the shopping experience on Amazon is one of the closest to that in some ways, because I literally, you like order it and then like 3 hours later, it's at your door. It's the most instant gratification thing ever.
Well, let's end on that. I like that magic. So hopefully, marketers, this podcast was magic for you. Hopefully, when you deal with your customers, there's nothing up your sleeves. You're not pulling any tricks. You're just delivering sheer awe and value. All right. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think. editor@marketingsherpa.com. So I just finished listening and thinking, what can I do next? How can I use this information? How can I improve my results? Well, just go to marketingsherpa.com/results. We've got this great download for you, 21 charts and tools. Based on $500 million in carefully measured test wins, will give you an idea of how to model your customer's mind and also, you know, get a chance of to understand how you can work with us, Mech Labs, to help you directly improve your marketing performance. And with that, we don't need to tell them to subscribe and that stuff, right? They're marketers, they're digital, they know, right? Right, Rebecca?
I don't know about that, but I don't know what kind of marketers we would be if we didn't ask them to subscribe and include a call to action here at the end of the podcast. I think the other thing we should mention is like almost everything we do here at Marketing Sherpa, this is technically an experiment. So we are rolling out this podcast for a couple months. We're going to be doing it regularly and producing a lot of really high quality content for our audience. But if we don't see that it's going to make an impact for us and for the people who are listening, we may not keep it going or do it as often. So if you're excited about what we're producing here, you want to hear more of it, you want to hear it more often, definitely subscribe. If you're on a platform that allows you to thumbs up or provide a star rating, please do so for us, because it lets us know that what we're doing here is meaningful to you and your marketing efforts for your customers. And that's really our ultimate goal. And we want to see those results and continue to help you grow. So that's kind of our call to action here.
Yeah, it's kind of meta. You know, we're teaching them how to improve results and how to measure their results better. And we're saying, like, hey, we eat our own dog food or drink our own champagne, whatever you want to call it, we're measuring our own results. At the end of the day, I'm not going to guilt trip them. You subscribe, don't subscribe, do whatever you want. I think Rebecca did mention, like, a kitten gets its wings or something every time you do subscribe or give a positive review. But yes. Again, no guilt trips.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to guilt trip our audience. Please subscribe. We love doing this for you guys, and we think that it provides a lot of value to the people in our audience. And I would really love to keep doing it for you. And we can't unless we know that it's making an impact. So definitely let us know. And the best way to do that is with a subscribe click or a thumbs up or a 5-star rating on iTunes.
All right. Thanks for listening.